Sitting in front of me at the minute, football agent Neil Sang from the Anfield Ramp, Neil Atkinson, and professional footballer with Crewe Alexandra, and a man who knows a thing or two about developing youth as well. He's involved in the youth setup there as well. I've got Ryan Lowe with me. Yeah, good evening to the most attractive gathering of football experts on planet Earth.
I think we should be running some sort of advert thing for ladies in the late 30s and early 40s. Looking for football talking companionship, ladies.
Believe me,
say what, Neil.
Believe me, if there was a webcam set up here, believe me, ladies.
We have got
there,
one, haven't we?
There is no,
yeah.
Please tell me we don't have a webcam.
it's
off. So good afternoon, gents. I'm Connor Phillips. You've just tuned in. You're listening to Full Time. This is All in the Games. 90 minutes to talk about the most splendid 90 minutes of the weekend, no matter what your team is, no matter who your team are, and no matter what you're involved with footballing wise. We will touch on it this afternoon. First of all, we just go across the panel. Sangy, also to Loey and Neil, give us your highlight of the weekend in three
he
words.
He loves this one, doesn't he? I never know what to say. Highlight on what?
Footballing
the
highlight.
Chinese meal I cooked yesterday, crispy chili chicken.
Footballing highlight of the weekend. Do you know what?
Veg, it was outstanding.
I'd like to get your mic levels here as well, so when we do across this. So give us your footballing highlight of the weekend.
It's probably got to be Liverpool's results and Everton winning as well, so a double for Merseyside.
Splinters backside. Anyway, we'll talk about that later on. Loie, give us your footballing highlight of the weekend.
Footballing highlight, Liverpool winning Friday night.
What about Crewe?
Crewe winning Saturday, 2-0. And me turning 38 yesterday, going out for a meal.
Oh, yeah, happy birthday, son.
Happy days.
Doesn't look a day.
38 and still playing.
Doesn't look a day over 37.
Good, not one single day over 37. And this may be the stupidest question I've ever asked in the history of my entire broadcasting career. Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap, what was your highlight of the footballing weekend?
Jordan Brian Henderson.
There we go, ladies and gentlemen.
Wanted it in three words.
Welcome to the show. Right, let's start. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to start with the blue side of Merseyside because a very good weekend for them. Everton 3, Middlesbrough 1. It just seems to be trundling on just at the right pace, this. Neil Sang, football agent, you've seen players come and go. You've seen signings been successful and not so successful. But there's something happening at Goodison. Like I've said every week, I worry if they get a couple of injuries. The depth isn't there, but yep. The opening 14, 15 and potentially 16 footballers seem to be playing in one direction.
Definitely. You know, the upside of, I know there's downsides to having lack of depth, Connor, but I think the upside of having a smaller squad is that people get to know each other really, really quickly. And I think that's really, really important for the new signings, the likes of Idrissa Gueye, Ashley Williams, people like that. Really, really evident. And then, of course, you've got some of the best young talents in the likes of Barkley, Dele Alli, Lukaku. Still only really young men, but know each other really, really well. So I think that's the upside. And I think with Everton now, there's a really good mix of everything. I think if you spoke to Everton fans over the years, they maybe lacked a little bit of flair or creativity at certain times. Then they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory last year on numerous occasions. So the other really pleasing thing for me, the start they've got, is this bit of a solidity about them, as well as having all that ability in their ranks. So I think Everton have got enough to mix it, given whatever's in front of them. So if they need to pack defence and hold on to a bit of a lead with 10 minutes to go, I think they've got it in the locker. But also I think they've got 3 and 4 goals as well.
Loie, from a professional footballer's perspective, what about the smaller squad? Is it easier to work within a smaller squad when you know you've only 15, 16, maybe 20 players, rather than that expansive squad of players and people that you don't see week in, week out?
I think probably, yeah. I think Sangi's right in terms of, you know, a bare 18, because then you've got young lads coming over. You know, Sangi has a young lad who probably trains with the first team, Tom Davis, yeah, quite a bit. So he's, yeah, getting them over and bringing them in and getting them, you know, gelling with the first team players. And you know, if they're next in line, and the next in line, I don't think Koeman's won that. He won't shy away from putting them in there. But as you said, they get injuries, then, you know, maybe he'd have to go shopping again. But look, he's recruited well. And, you know, the players he's brought in, yeah, he lost Stones. And you think, well, I weren't really a big fan of Stones, me, in all honest. You know, he's a good footballer. He's not the strongest. He's a bit too
maverick type, and he takes chances.
Yeah, he takes too many chances for me. Whereas Pep Guardiola will let him take chances because that's his philosophy, and he'll do that. And he probably shine there as he has been. But I think with Koeman, I'm a little bit worried for the first time in probably 10, 15 years of where Everton are going to finish. I do want them to do well. I'm a Liverpool supporter first and foremost. I'd love nothing better. We were sitting here on the show last year saying we won Champions League football on Merseyside with Liverpool and Everton. And look, you know, if they carry on doing what they're doing, then I'm sure they're going to finish in there, and it's going to be a tough ride for both teams.
So Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap, let me ask you, Have Everton really played anyone yet?
Doesn't matter, because we keep saying in this league that anyone can beat anyone. Watford beat Manchester United the weekend just gone. The point about this is you don't play football on paper. And Everton, yeah, you can say they're better than all four sides, that they've got wins against, that they should be beating them. But then most seasons, you know, if you win three out of four against the sides that you should be beating, that's about par for the course. Everton are on four out of four. And I think that you can be churlish about that sort of stuff and say, well, they haven't played anyone. And certainly when you're looking at, you know, like in comparison to Liverpool's start of the season with the four away games plus Leicester at home, the champions, you can say that, but it doesn't matter because I'm looking at Hull next week for Liverpool from a Liverpool point of view and thinking that's a massive game and Liverpool are going to have to play well to break Hull down. Everton go 1-0 down. You can say it's a bit of a harsh goal. I think the goalkeeper should be stronger. I think it's still a foul, but the goalkeeper should be stronger. Both of those things are true simultaneously. But they go a goal down. Doesn't face them, doesn't stop them. They go in 3-1 at half time. To do that, you've got to have the right mentality. You've got to have the right approach. And you've just scored three goals and a half of Premier League football. There's not many sides who are knocking around scoring regularly three goals and a half of Premier League football against whoever they're facing, whether it's a side who's just come up or a side who are, you know, for instance, like Arsenal, which Liverpool did at the start of the season when Liverpool scored four and a half against Arsenal. You don't do that often. And sides who are doing that, they're playing well, they're playing good stuff. And Everton are playing well and they're playing good stuff. And they're going to take some stopping. Because once you get into that rhythm of knowing how to win a game of football, how to do the bad last 10, how to do the expansive 15, 20 minutes in the first half, how to turn on the afterburners for 20 minutes at Sunderland when it's been a bit of a trappy first 45. Once you begin to learn all that, you've got all that muscle memory, your players are all used to it, and then you can adapt to all these scenarios. And as I say, they're away at Bournemouth next weekend, Everton. Wouldn't surprise me if they get themselves a win there. The way Bournemouth plays could well play into Everton's hands. They want to play some football. And then before you know where you are, Everton are six games in, one five, drawn one, 16 points on the board, and it doesn't take that they're not going to go on at that rate, but it doesn't take that much extrapolation to see a world where Everton get 70 points.
Yeah, I've got an Everton producer in my ear doing somewhat of an audio a jiggy-diggy dance there, as you said that. he's very, very happy with the Anfield wrap this afternoon, and his words were dead right in your ear. But look, individually, it seems to have come right for Everton at just the right time. Lukaku, relatively successful over the last couple of games, decent weekend. I've been very, very impressed with Bolasie, and it was good to see Barkley coming back from having been taken off at half time. Louis, from a footballing perspective, when you are taken off at half time, it is almost the worst thing that can happen to you as a footballer, right?
No. Coming on a sub and being subbed, that's worse.
It's a bit third behind that. And the second worst thing is Phil Babb going into a goalpost and getting his bits caught in the net. But anyway, what is it like at half time?
First and foremost, I think Koeman stamped his authority with everyone. And he's gone in there and said, look, listen, I'm the boss. And I know from speaking to one of the players that he made them sign a real book in terms of the rules and regulations. I want you to commit to this. And you know, you only have to see that the team spirit they've got now. Leighton Baines come out and done an interview. I didn't see it, but my mate told me about it before, saying that the team togetherness, this, that and the other, when they never had that last season under Martinez. It had gone for whatever reason. So he's got that back straight away. He stamped his authority. I was pleased he put Barkley back in the team after taking him off at Sunderland, because as a player, you want that chance again. You don't want to wait 4 or 5 weeks.
I agree with that.
You want to wait. You want to get right back in the mix.
Is that why he does it initially, do you think?
Well, I don't know what Koeman's done initially. He might have said, look, I'll give you another go. Now, by all accounts, he's shone on Saturday. So, therefore, he's got his place back. He's kept his place. But if he'd have kept him out the team for another couple of weeks, Barkley could have went the other way and not got back to his best. Because, look, he's a quality player.
Neil.
There's something in the way the way those games have fallen there. Barkley's poor first half against Sunderland. I saw the game and he was poor. But I think that I actually think Koeman is exceptionally clever from a managerial point of view, because he knows with one change, firstly, he can improve Everton. But secondly, Everton should be able to beat Sunderland, that Sunderland side, without Ross Barkley on the pitch.
Yeah.
And then he also knows, I'm reintroducing him at the weekend at home against Middlesbrough, not away at City or away at Chelsea or away at Arsenal. I drop him back in at home against Middlesbrough. A game again we should win and we should dominate. So the player, all he needs to do is have a good first 10. He has a good first 10, gets his touch back, feels good, has got the message that the manager's pumped into him there in terms of what the expectations are. It sends a message to the rest of the squad. It sends a message to the side against Sunderland. This fella will bomb anyone out. If he'll take Barkley off at half time, he'll bomb anyone out. And everyone, you know, when he says put your authority on, and little things like, for instance, that rule book thing, you can thumb your nose at that and think it's all modern, you know, all modern management nonsense.
Committed but what, to it, that, yeah, once you've done it.
you've chosen it.
Yeah.
And he says, he gets to say, as the Everton, you know, you've all agreed these standards. We're all holding each other to these standards. You've signed up to these standards. This is what we expect of each other. Mm. And you've chosen that. You could have chosen not to do that. You could have said, I don't want to sign that. You could have argued with it. You could have said, you disagree with this or you disagree
but
with this.
Is it all rosy at the moment? Because we know that changes and that will change when your back goes against the wall and you're given a thumping by a side who are no good.
Of course, yeah. You know, obviously things feel good when you win and they feel less good when you lose. But when you've agreed a set of standards that you hold each other to, when you've got that as a group, that's three quarters of the battle of building a team. And the fact that he's gone in there and setting those sorts of examples in terms of the way, in practical senses, in terms of subbing Barkley, in terms of the fact that he's held himself to account when they were at West Brom and he made the early sub. You know, we've all signed up to this and we've got this togetherness in this, I think it's a big deal. And I think that, at some point, you know, Everton are going to lose games. They might lose two or three and four in a four-game spell, but they'll all know that they can look at each other and respect each other and they can all call back on these wins.
But you know what, to me as well, it's a respect thing, I think.
Yeah.
Ronald Koeman, look what he's done, look where he's been, look what who he's played for. Them players in there have thought, they're set back by him a little bit, probably in awe of him. Now, if he's talking to midfielders like Sabahri, the type of player he was, although he was a bit defensive, why aren't you going to listen to him?
Mm.
So I just think I think with the signing this little rule book and these changes that he's made, I don't think any of them players in there now, you like your Delafeos, your Blassies, your Moraleses, they don't want to let him down, your Barclays, they don't want to let him down.
Yeah.
Because you know if they do, they'll be out the team. And he's not scared to turn around and say, he's done it with Lukaku, I read a quote on him early on in the season. Well, he might not be good enough for us. He's going to another team. They're worried about him leaving to Chelsea. Well, he's saying that he might not be good enough for us, yeah. So let's not get too carried away with him. Mm. Obviously, he's gone away on international duty, scored a couple of goals, come back, and now he's firing.
That's a good point you've made there, because I think that was that, in essence, one of the problems with Martinez. It happened with Rodgers towards the tail end of his time at Liverpool as well, that they were coming out talking a good game, so to speak, and there was no criticism whatsoever. And the players in behind were obviously hearing a different message on Sky Sports, on the TV, what they're seeing their manager say and what they're hearing in the changing rooms. Sangi, you get the feeling that exactly what Ronald Koeman is saying in the changing rooms are part of what he's saying to the TV, to the media. He doesn't say a lot. When he does say it, he's honest, he's straightforward, and the players know where they stand.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And going back to the Ross Barkley one, just to rubber stamp the point you're making, Conor Azila sat him down and said, is that first half good enough? Because I read all the story about he was sitting down with him watching the video. And if you've got Ross Barkley over there and Ross Barkley knows he's looking at you as the gaffer and he knows how honest and you know, sort of forthright you are, when he says, is this good enough by your standards? You've got to be honest. You've got to be honest back. So that sort of honesty pervades the whole football club. That's where your standards are driven. And then all of a sudden, I know what you said about a few results might change it and whatever else. Well, that's fine. But there's something that I'm interested in terms of football about culture and climate. So the climate is the current mood. And it's dead easy for football clubs, managers, mainly owners, fans definitely, to get really, really hacked off with the result or two. It affects the climate. But if your culture runs deep, i.e. a culture of high standards, a culture of behaviour, a culture of togetherness, which they've all signed this rule book, if you've got that culture deeply embedded in your football club, the climate it doesn't really matter what result, because you've still got this belief in the process. Because you know what? Other than Arsenal back in when the early 2000s or the late 90s who went a whole season unbeaten, tell me another team that's done that. So you understand, as a football club, you'll lose games, you'll draw games against opposition you should beat, so keep your standards high and the culture right, and the results, the few little blips don't matter.
And Neil, quickly before we go to the break,
it's managing without fear. I think that's a key thing. I think, for instance, let's say Everton lose the next 10 games and Ronald Koeman gets sacked, he gets another really good job and he's still Ronald Koeman, he's still achieved everything he's achieved in the game. Same thing for Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool, and we were having a conversation earlier today and something else we were doing, saying, well, these fellas, if you're David Moyes currently at Sunderland, you need to make that work, and you're full of fear, because if you don't, where's your next job coming from? You'd have to take Sunderland. What's your next job? Whereas Ronald Koeman, he can walk back into Benfica, he can walk into a Portuguese side. Jurgen Klopp, if it doesn't work at Liverpool, you know, he'll be at the Bernabeu. You know what I mean? You've got this situation. Koeman could get the nod from the Camp Nou at some point. You've got this situation where and so much of management up until about sort of 4, 5, 6 years ago has been around this culture of fear, that you're worried about what's going to happen. happen, and you've got to get your, you motivate your players with fear, and you motivate them with the fear of defeat. Whereas now, I think there is being a bit of a shift with this. These younger managers now, who are under sort of 45, 50, who've come through, and instead they're going into it and saying, well, I'm setting my terms, you're agreeing to my terms, but they're setting them in both directions. They're saying to the board, these are my terms, if you don't like them, I'll just go and go somewhere else and I'll do perfectly well.
Right, yep. Coming up in a second, more from All in the Game. I'm joined today by Neil Sang, football agent, Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap, and Ryan Lowe, professional footballer with Crew Alexandra. Coming up in a second, Everton fans, we've got something nice for you. A man who's entered the 600 club this week, Gareth Eisenhower Barry. He doesn't have a middle name. I thought I'd just stick that one in to make it sound a bit better. His Wikipedia page is just Gareth Barry. We'll talk about him next. I love this show. I genuinely do love doing this every single Monday. Joined by Neil Sang, football agent, Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap, and professional footballer, Crew Alexandra. From Crew Alexandra, Ryan Lowe. Ryan, first of all, have you had much experience of Gareth Barry in your life as a professional? Do you know him? Have you bumped into him? And even from a non-footballing partner perspective as a player, but what do you make of him?
I think I played against them back in my time at Shrewsbury. It was like a testimonial, and he was playing for Aston Villa at the time, and he was quality then on the ball. You could see, obviously, you know, what he was going to do and where he was going to be, and I think obviously Everton now, he found home. He was at City and hardly played. He was, you know, in and out the team. But I think first and foremost, to achieve 600 league games is
only the third to do it behind Lampard and Rooney.
Is something in itself, and I think he's found at home at Everton, and you know he's probably not resting on his laurels because he knows that Koeman's gonna, you know, could go and bring someone else. And I read a quote the other day. Someone mentioned to him about will he get a new contract, and Koeman, no. If he carries on playing like the way he's playing now, towards the end of the season, then we'll give him a new contract. And I thought, you know what, fair play, like, because some managers would have went, yeah, well, we'll have a chat about it and just throw money there and everywhere. So I think you're going to see a good season out of Gareth Barry this year, because only one, he's playing for a new deal, and two, as I say, he's playing under one of the, you know, best midfielders there was, and he's a top manager.
In the pantheon of midfielders who have been a success in the English game, Sangi and also Neil Atkinson, where does he rate?
I think he's profoundly underrated, to be honest with you. I think he's been a marvellous. I think he's effectively been the third or fourth best English centre midfielder of the last 10, 15 years. And I think he's underrated because, for instance, all the focus has gone on other players. When he wins that first league with City, all the focus is understandably on someone like Yaya Toure, David Silva, Sergio Aguero. I understand that, but Barry was running the show. And I think both him and Michael Carrick have ended up. They're the great losers from that period of time where, for instance, in international terms, England were desperate to try and make Gerrard and Lampard work as a centre-mid partnership, whereas they'd been better off either going with the three or committing to the idea of, listen, it's got to be one or the other.
So what happens if Rafael Benitez gets his way, Xabi Alonso shipped out, Gareth Barry comes in as he was trying to resolutely force through two or three times, specifically one time that many people have talked about.
What happens there? Liverpool still finished second. 08-09. So, for instance, Liverpool were trying to get him away. But if Liverpool managed to get Barry and keep Alonso, which was Benitez's absolute ideal, by the way, get Barry and keep Alonso, then Liverpool could have gone on and won the league. But it's fundamentally, I think that it wouldn't have made. I think Barry would have come in, had a perfectly good season, dovetailed well with Gerrard, and Liverpool would still have finished second. He's not going to kick you on from. But to use the Alonso example, I don't think he's as good as Alonso. I don't think he's quite matched Alonso's career. But I don't think there's not rungs between them. And I've everyone forgets with Alonso that before Benitez tried to sell him, he'd had one poor season and one season where he was broken up through injury, and had actually lost his place to Mascherano before the idea that Barry was even mooted, and he was playing Gerrard and Mascherano in there. So, for instance, the Chelsea semi in 2007, Alonso comes off the bench, and Gerrard and Mascherano were the ones who are playing. But I mean, I put all that to one side. Really, I really wish he had played for Liverpool. But I think he's just a very, very good, very, very intelligent, technically gifted footballer who clearly grafts and is a popular teammate and good around dressing rooms.
Sangi, we've got 30 seconds before we have to go to the sport. How do you rate Gareth Barry?
I'd say he'd be in my top 10. Midfield players of Premier League history. I don't put him in the top echelon because it's one of those things. As a young kid, you're looking at flair. You'll remember brilliance. You'll remember a phenomenal goal, a bit of skill, an unbelievable pass. So Gareth Barry, I would say, does some ridiculously important things that a lot of football people will cherish. Yeah, and consistency and injury free, and lives the right life. So you've got to laud him for all of those things. as well as I said, he's not really that special talent, but you've got to laud him for all the things he does. Fantastic, Connor.
Right, your season has got off to a superb start if you're an Everton fan, and your season has got on to, well, not a bad start. 2008, 2009, Liverpool had a start like this, similar to that then, but it's not too bad at the moment. See the Anfield Rap guys smiling both online and offline. It's good to see it. We will chat about that in a second. I'm going to be talking about the fact that Joel Matip, is he the answer back there? Jordan Henderson, what a goal, what a performance. And like we mentioned last week, Adam Lallana, has he finally come to the fore? And we'll chat about Chelsea 1, Liverpool 2. On top of that, everything from Joey Barton to Stoke having a horrendous time of it, Rangers, Manchester United. And has anyone seen Paul Pogba?
This is Full Time Radio City Talk.
Radio City Talk, we're listening, you're listening to Full Time, this is All in the Game. I'm intrigued, right? Love this, right? Sitting here having a chat with three men who really do know their apples in the world of football. I'm talking Neil Sang, football agent, Neil Atkinson from the multi-award winning Anfield Rap podcast, and also Ryan Lowe from Crew Alexander, professional footballer and a man who's been in the game for 7 decades. He told us his birthday yesterday, so he's been in the game for quite some time. We'll start with you, Ryan. Just we're talking about Liverpool, obviously a really good weekend for them, their best Premier League start since the 2008-2009 season. Let's just address Chelsea against Liverpool at the weekend, Friday night football. Not a big fan of the Friday night football, I have to say. I think it's a bit unfair for the fans. As a spectacle, it's quite good. How did you think it went? And as a Liverpool fan, I suppose, barring a slip, it could have been even better for Liverpool. 2-1, you'll take?
All day. You'd have took a draw, in all honesty, going to Chelsea. But I think, obviously, the way Liverpool have started, you know, you're fancying them now. They're going to these big, so-called big clubs, Chelsea's, hopefully Man United, the Tottenhams and Arsenal's. And you're not going without any fear no more. You're going there thinking, you know what, it could be our day today. And that's credit to the manager as well. We were talking about Koeman before. The manager, he's not letting anyone rest. He's telling them straight how it is. If you're, you know, Moreno's out the team now because he ain't being good enough. So he pulled him out and said, right, and he's playing Milner there. Milner doesn't look happy playing there, but he's doing a fantastic job. Someone compared him to Pogba the other day on the social media, and I was like, oh my. But again, I think, you know, Liverpool are going in the right direction. You know, Mane, a few of the other players, they're looking well, and I'm excited to see them this year.
Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap. I was at a wedding on Friday evening, right? It was the worst time the wedding was at, as they are. And the speeches and all were happening, and it was a kind of fancy hotel, and it didn't have like a little Sky TV room. It didn't have that room. It was a bit too fancy for me, so I had my phone, had it up on Wi-Fi. I was watching it through my phone, and it was kind of dipping in and out. So I'd missed bits of it, and I'd gone back to look at it again. But in the interim, in the little bit between, I'd seen probably 60 minutes of it until I actually watched the full game again. I managed to pick up the Anfield Rap and read some of the stuff that you put on there. And there was a top 10. And number one was, I'm nearly sure it was from yourself, saying that I'm not a glass half full or a glass half empty kind of
guy. No, it's another Neil Scott. Oh, right. He's an older Liverpool supporter, and he's intensely miserable. He says he's not glass half full, he's not glass half empty. He's more me glasses smashed and all over
the
floor.
And a good read of that. And I read the 10. And do you know what? Towards the end of his piece on the Anfield Rap, get yourself on anfieldrap.com, he just says, look, I am miserable. I'm consistently miserable. But something is just happening at Anfield. I'm not saying it's massive. Not going to say we'll win the league. Not saying we're going to win the quadruple. But something's happening.
Yeah, I mean, we can't win the quadruple. We're only in 3 tournaments. So unless they're going to make special purposes, we'll have to rule that one out now. But something is happening, and I think it's more just that they're focused, and I think that they're serious, and I think that's what you take from Friday night is that I think it's actually a long way from a perfect performance. When you look back on it at the time, feeling it and watching the game, you know, it felt fantastic because first half, they dominate Chelsea. Going 2, they should probably find a way to go in 3. But they can create a little bit more, and they didn't create as much as they did against Arsenal. They didn't create as much as they have done, in even against Spurs, really, in terms of clear-cut chances. But they still found a way to put the ball in the back of the net twice. And then the second half, again, you think they've seen it out when they get to 60. And it's just rank bad play by 3 or 4 players that gifts Chelsea that goal. It's not even 2 Chelsea players doing anything very good. It's lads are tired, knocking off a little bit. It happens. But when then they go 2-1, Chelsea don't have another clear chance in the game, and Liverpool do, and that's the main thing to take from it, I think, is that, you know, Liverpool look like a serious proposition in every aspect of the football match, and it's probably the most, in a sense, the most complete performance. You know, in a weird way, if Liverpool had gone and won 4-0 and blown them off the park first half, it wouldn't almost be as satisfying. You've got to see them do a lot of the dirty stuff, see a game out, put it into touch.
It's that same last 15 minutes against Arsenal earlier on in the season, yeah, as well, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's just it's just going right. This is, we've now got to do this. This is how we now win, and we all muck in together, and we all win together. And I think that you got to see that, and you got that togetherness, and there was the same intensity in the stand, and it was something that I didn't see the pre-match. I was there, and someone said Henderson looked very, very intense in the tunnel, and you got the impression Liverpool had been sent out. You see from the manager at the end and the response at the end that there's a feeling internally at Anfield that was a big win. It was a big game, and it was a big game to win for Liverpool, because not least because Liverpool have played 5 games, they've got 10 points, they deserve more.
Yeah.
So if they hadn't won against Chelsea, you know, and you look at those patch of five, and I suspect if you're the Liverpool manager, you're almost looking at those five as their own challenge, and your minimum probably would have been 10 points. You've seen those performances, you'd like more than 10 points, and then suddenly if you didn't get them, you'd be heartbroken.
Well, it stands out like a sore thumb, the Burnley result. When you look down at the list of things, Neil Sang is with us, football agent, football commentator, and he says he's not a Liverpool fan, but we think he is. But when you look at the performances now, and you look down at the sheet of paper and you see Burnley up there, it just screams, look at the defeat against Burnley. It's almost the polar opposite of what Everton have had. Everton have played the teams that, in essence, are going to be down there towards the end of the season. No disrespect to those teams. Liverpool have played the teams who are probably going to be further up, further north in the side. But the only defeat they get is to Burnley. The big fear, it's this Liverpool factor. It has happened for generations. I can remember my entire Liverpool career, or supporting career, if that's what you call it, always do well against the big sides, let it all fall to pieces against the wee sides.
Yeah, and it's like Neil said, no game of football's played on paper. So if you looked and if you flipped it round, Conor, and this is the thing too, flipped it round, Liverpool beat Burnley and lose against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, still you're still on 10 points. So people wouldn't be talking about this thing. You might be going, oh, we're disappointed because, you know, we haven't done Chelsea, battered Arsenal for periods. You know, wish we'd have done Chelsea. That's what fans will be saying. Mm. My thing is this. I always believe that it's a mentality. And Jose Mourinho used to say that Chelsea, he'd say, look at the bottom 10 teams. And we'd all pick them. We might differ with maybe...
Yeah, 3 or 4 names.
Yeah, 2, 3, 4 names, whatever it is. And he used to say, there's 20 games against those bottom 10. I'm not saying we should get 60 points, but if we got 50 plus... we only need another 25, 30 from the other load. And then we're doing okay. So it's basically taking sort of half points against the top 10 sides or the other 9. So when you look at it like that, yeah, absolutely. But it's a mentality thing. It's dead easy for Liverpool to go to a Burnley and go, we just have to turn up. And as much as you want your players to work it out for themselves, they sometimes need that little bit of a reminder.
So how do you approach the Hull game coming up next after that specific run of games and Derby tomorrow night?
It's just a reminder that any team can beat you in this division. And it's also a reminder that when you're on, nobody will live with you. And as Lowy will tell you, I think, Lowy, would you agree with that? Sometimes you need from your manager, you'll need that little bit of, hey, boys, remember.
Lowy?
Yeah, what I always think at our level, you play top teams, who you think top teams. So for argument's sake, we played Portsmouth a few weeks ago, top teams. Well, why are they a top team? Because they pay good wages. Crew pay just average wages. So you're looking at it and you're thinking, and I got our lads in Udler, went, look, these was a big club. They're not a big club anymore. The players might be on more money because they pay more money. It doesn't mean to say they're better. And I always look at the players and the teams and the clubs like this now. You know, you look at the Chelsea players probably earning twice as much as Liverpool players, but would you swap any of Chelsea's players for Liverpool players at the minute? Maybe one or two, give or take. So I was looking at when you're playing these top teams, it doesn't matter who they are, what's in front of you, it's 11v11. And I think Klopp now, this season, is going to get his players to gel more in terms of, look, I don't care who you're playing, I want 3 points. Mm. Or, we're struggling today, lads. We've only got Henderson's out, Mane's out. We've got a few, you know, young lads playing. If we can get a point out, it's going to be a good point for us. So I think Liverpool need to go down the route of, it doesn't matter who you're playing, you've got to just try and get points. I remember the quote off Joe Cole a few years ago saying that when he was at Chelsea, when they went on and won the league a few times, was, I think it was Mourinho at the time, he said, let's beat all the lower less teams who you're expected to beat, and then don't lose any of your own games and you'll win the league. And that's what they've done. They won the league a couple of times through it. So I think Liverpool need to take that, you know, that type of philosophy into their hands to potentially try and climb up that league and finish in the top four.
Right, you're listening to the voice of professional footballer Brian Lowe from Crewe Alexandra, Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap and also football agent and general expert. I think he's a Liverpool fan. Neil Sang, who also joins me on Radio City Talk. This is All in the Game. Right, coming back in a second. We focused on an Everton midfield maestro. We'll do exactly the same with the other side of Stanley Park in a second. Jordan Henderson, not a bad old game. We'll find out what the three experts have had to say about Henderson. Also about Matip, Lallana and a Twitter spat. Really? We'll find out in a second.
This is Full Time. Radio City Talk.
It is full time. It is Radio City Talk, and you listen to All in the Game every single Monday evening between 5 and 6:30. Laurie, I've noticed, as per usual, you've gone through with your ritual, brought something nice into the studio.
Feel you know what? It's a bit sloppy from me, to be honest. There's only one pack of munchies between four of us. That's probably two each, but you know, it's better than nothing, isn't it?
To be honest, it's better than
my body's
host.
A temple. I won't be having any.
Yeah, for the you just
eat cheat now. Day. Monday's a cheat day, Sang. You should know that.
Every day,
still burning off all that energy and all that fat and all them carbs what we had for Saturday's game. So that's another tip.
I'll not tell you that professional footballer Ryan Lowe walked in here earlier on eating a bag of crisps.
Told you, cheat day. When you look like me at 38, Connie, you can eat what you want, mate.
There's not a pick of fat on him. I'm sitting here getting a complex, lad. Let's move on.
Right, let's move on with it, because every day is a cheat day in my house. Right, let's have a chat about... we're chatting about Liverpool. We've already covered Everton today. We'll have a quick chat about what happened on the red side of Merseyside. I want to start... We'll get it done very quickly about Jordan Henderson, because you can get sucked into a Jordan Henderson rabbit hole very quickly, because he does genuinely split opinions. But from a finishing point of view, on Friday evening, Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap, there was a couple of seasons ago we had a few of them, and we thought this was going to be something we'd get consistently out of Jordan Henderson. We haven't seen one in a while, but you got to say, what a strike.
It's unreal, it's unstoppable, it's a great effort. So, you know, I mean, I was in the ground and we were saying it didn't look in until it was in. You know, it's all the way through. I'm just thinking it's gone over that. Yeah. And suddenly it dips and it's in the back of the net, and, you know, Courtois, there's nothing he can do about it. It's a great effort, it's a great strike. I think he's got to add the easier ones to his game, and I think he knows that, and I think that's what... I almost think, you know, he's got one under his belt now this season. Maybe, you know, if he can get another one next couple of games, and then suddenly it's a bit, you know, it's playing that position, playing midfield, it's a big difference going from none to 3-4 in terms of your own relaxation and how you're judging yourself. So if he can get himself up to 3 or 4 soon, he might be able to have the sort of season where he gets himself to 7 or 8 quite quickly. But I think it's just desserts for the performance, but it's just a great, great goal.
Just talking from the on-the-field perspective, Neil Sang, football agent, if you're representing somebody and you're dealing with someone day in, day out, if they get that one or two goals, how good is it for their actual feeling, and how much easier do they become to deal with as professional footballers? Because we'll see it from a professional footballer's viewpoint in a second with Lowy, but from an agent perspective, do you see that?
They're never easy to deal with, Connor, really, are they? They're highly strung athletes, aren't they?
Munchy Mondays.
No, of course, they're easier, they're more pleasant to be around when things are going well, but my job is to put it all into perspective, maybe add a little bit of sense to it. If I was Jordan Henderson's agent and I'm looking at that, I'm looking at his, I think it was a miss against Leicester where he comes late into the box, he's 10 yards out or whatever, and he blazes it. So you go from that to probably, I'll stick it out there now, don't you? You're going to see a better strike all season than that. It was absolutely perfection. You see it going in the top corner. It was incredible, as Neil said, unstoppable. So you just remind them that as much as you enjoy the moment of the goal, you don't harp on about the moment of the miss. Mm. You just remind them that it's in his locker and to keep getting into those positions, because if he can add goals, if he could become a Gerrard-esque 12 to 15 goal a season man with no penalties as an example, he's absolutely golden. There's no reason why he doesn't start every game for England, but he's got to add it. The frustration for me is looking at him is it's in his locker.
Louis, from a Liverpool perspective, you kind of take 7 or 8 a season without the penalties and free kicks. You would, and you could step on to that next level. So what does he feel now? He wakes up on Saturday morning, right? He's got the weekend off. How does he feel from a professional footballing perspective?
I think he's on an assist bonus rather than a goal bonus, mate. Look, he's obviously going to feel great, and he'll give it that one. Obviously, he's captain of the club, and he'll give it, you know, great team performance and whatnot. And he'll try and brush his goal down a little bit, as top professionals do, because it's not just about him, it's about the team. But in terms of, you know, that strike, he probably won't hit one as good as that ever again. But what he can do is, as Sangi's just said, he can get in the box a bit more and score tap-ins, like Stevie G used to. Now, look, we're going back to that comparison a little bit there, again, if you like, because Stevie G, Henderson, big price tag and whatnot. He's nowhere near Stevie G, and it's a different levels, which, you know, look, he's a good player, but you're talking different levels with the pair of them. Now, he should be waking up Monday morning going, great strike Friday. Do you know what? I'm going to practice them through the week. Mm. Keep it in them. And he probably does. But then, on the other hand, Liverpool come up against Derby County tomorrow, whether he plays or not. Do you really believe that Derby County's midfielder or older midfielder is going to let Jordan Henderson get as many shots in as he likes? He's not. because they'll work on it, they'll go get tighter ends and don't let him get no shots in. So then he's going to find it even tougher again now to score one of them goals.
But then the beauty of that, surely, is that it means that if Henderson's encroaching at the edge of the box, they're trying to close him down quicker.
Oh, of course. Through little ball, slip, yeah, Coutinho, you're perfect. In you go. But we're talking about Henderson getting 8 to 10 goals.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, for the next few games, he might not get any because people will be saying to him, get tighter, Jordan Henderson, don't let him hit it because he can hit it.
Right, let's move to the other side of the pitch. The master of the dark arts, I've heard this 3 or 4 times over the last couple of days. Matip has done something. He's kind of arrived sort of under a cloud of... Though. We didn't really know much about him. He's played at a good level in Germany, but it's just going in and dealing with it, and it's not bad when Diego Costa spends 90 minutes inside his pocket.
I didn't understand this master of the dark arts thing in that I just thought he went and won the ball early. And if that's now a dark art, then, you know, I remember watching Ricardo Carvalho pull people down all over
but
the
I
place.
Suppose when you,
I didn't
when,
see any of that, really.
When we spent the last 6 months talking about John Stones and more recently David Luiz about them being ball-playing centre-halves, you're right. He did almost the old-fashioned centre-half.
But he's also a ball-playing centre-half, and this is he just looks like a good footballer to me. And the Garth Crooks quote today that he saw some dark art. I didn't see any. I just saw that Liverpool had a clear plan to deal with Costa, which is never let him settle and turn. Because if you let Costa settle and turn, he'll bully you. He wants to be facing goal. He wants to get... So if you let him get that little move, and suddenly before you know where you are, his elbows are out, his chest's out, he's hard to get the ball off. And all Liverpool had the attitude of, he's just never going to get to do that. That, you know, and certainly first half, they were able to get right that so tight, so close to him, the tightest you've seen them on any centre forward this season so far. And they've come up against Harry Kane, by the way. Matip didn't go that close to Harry Kane because Harry Kane will roll you and then you're dead. So, you know, I thought it was noticeable that the idea was you're absolutely first into him, because different players have different needs in terms of what they want. Kane wants to get you close, he wants to roll you, but if you give him a little bit of space, he hasn't got as much pace and he's not as difficult to get it off when he's bursting through. Conversely, Costa wants to get that little moment where he settles and then he goes. And I just thought it was a clever performance from both Matip and Lovren, and I think Matip looks the best. Thing I most liked about him was it's just tons and tons of composure. And it's tons and tons of composure after the mistake. So he makes a mistake and he must know he's made the mistake, in the same way the week before Lucas had made the mistake. You don't see Liverpool players pointing fingers at each other. You don't see any of that. What you see is, right lads, same thing that Neil was talking about earlier on. You know, they're all looking at each other going, right lads, we start again, let's play our football, it's all going to be fine, you're all good players, we've got a right attitude, the climate's right.
Sangi, is this why we all had eyebrows raised a couple of weeks ago that Sacco could be on his way out of Anfield, even on loan? Is this why? Because he knew the quality that was there with Matip?
Absolutely, that's the thing. Is any manager making a judgment call on a potential in or out, we'll be looking at what's around him. Do we need to add or can we afford to let go? And I think he'll absolutely do that. I think he's still, you know, if he's going to let Sacco go, though, I think he absolutely needs to replace him. I don't think it's done and dusted with the two or three lads that are there. I think he has to bring somebody else in. And it's a position, along with left-back, that I've thought they need to address quite quickly. And I've said, I mean, from the start of the season, I've said that. I think he needs to get on with it come January. I think he needs to do that.
And Louis, Derby County in the, let's call it the League Cup, big change. I love the quote from Klopp today that he doesn't have a weak side. You know, he doesn't, are you going to put in a weak side? He said he doesn't see things like that. That's not his mentality. What do you expect Liverpool to do against Derby?
Well, again, obviously, a lot of the younger lads are going to play, aren't they? So, you know, Derby and they'll push over this year. They're a good team, good manager.
Not having a great run of it though,
struggling now, aren't they?
Are they struggling? Yeah,
at the bottom, struggling.
But I think Liverpool have just got to go there again, as we spoke about, whether it's a young team or whether it's inexperienced, whatever he plays, weakened team, if that's what you want to call it, just got to go there and take the win. Simple as, play some football, score some goals, and keep the run going, keep the bouncing going, keep winning, and let's see where it takes us.
It's sometimes harder, Connor, as well, for the Derby County to come and play a team of nearlies, you know, lads who are in and around the squad, train. I mean, look at like an Ings as an example, in and around the squad, training with them every day, in and around, they don't quite get on the bench, aren't nicking many minutes in the Premier League. It's absolutely a chance for them to remind the manager. Because I would say this way, if you've got a player who's not in the team, it's a test of your mettle. But I would say, if you're not ready for your opportunity, guess what? It's going to come. So be ready.
It
might not come for a while, but just be ready. That's your job as a professional footballer. Be ready. The likes of Ings against Derby and some of the younger lads, they'll be ready.
Do you think players like Karius could get his chance tomorrow against Derby? You know, just to change this up a bit and sort of really stamp the Klopp authority onto the Liverpool setup. Any views? We've got about 30 seconds.
Be amazed if Karius doesn't start. I think something will have gone on if he doesn't start tomorrow. I wouldn't do too many. I'd do the outfield 10. I'd do sort of 4. Not least because you don't want to bring them in and completely unsettle them. So if Firmino's back fit, I'd bring him back in. I'd have a look at maybe one in midfield. I'd still play Henderson. And I'd have a look at giving Moreno a run at left back. But I wouldn't do more than 4 or 5.
Right. Quick question for you all, lads.
I thought I only had 30 seconds. I've raced through that.
It's just a very quick question. One word answer. Where has Paul Pogba gone?
He's boss.
Where is he? I haven't seen him play yet.
Just his form's not great at the minute.
Right. Rumour has it that he has he's hiding in a room somewhere scared of Jose Mourinho. And you could see that. Where has he gone? Mourinho, 3 defeats in a week. Also, Twitter, Gary Neville and a Liverpool account. And Stoke, absolutely horrific from a team who have in the last 11 defeats, 8 of them have been by 3 goals or more. And Joey Barton, what's happening? We will discuss this and more after the news at 6.
This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool. Now, full time on Radio City Talk.
It's Radio City Talk. It's 2 minutes after 6. You're listening to All in the Game on full time. And the beauty about having a professional footballer in the studio is that we can't actually air probably 95% of the things that he tells us in the studio. That professional footballer is Ryan Lowe from Crew Alexandra from the Anfield.
It's not gossip, by the way. They're just great stories. I'm playing on a Saturday and everything that goes around it.
I need someone to write this book for me.
I'm not sure. It's like what we were talking about earlier on about this being a medium for the middle-aged ladies to come and listen for the handsome men in the studio being a little bit inappropriate. Your book, I get the feeling, could be up there with that as well. Neil Sang, football agent, joins me as well. Neil
60 Atkinson's Shades of Grey.
And the aforementioned Ryan Lowe from Crew Alexandra. Right, lads, this could get very messy and could get very...
Shouldn't bring us all three in at once, you know, I don't think.
What's he had? Hey. Is he even on the coffee in there?
I had the munchies before I came in.
And remember, always do radio shows responsibly. Anyway, speaking of responsibly and not responsibly, let's have a little look at the rest of the footballing world. I'm going to start. Louis, every time you're in here, right, we try and package up as much of this out. And if you're listening now, get yourself onto Radio City Talk, at Radio City Talk, and you can hear the actual show back and any of the discussions we had. I always say to Dave, the producer, I say, you always remind me, with the Scouse accent, of Joey Barton. Sure. As how you speak.
Do you know what?
Your inflections and stuff, right? And I want to chat
no
a bit
for this, is the...
about, no I just want to chat about Joey Barton.
Don't ask me to speak in French, you know.
I get the feeling your French could be a little bit better than his. So let's have a quick chat about Joey Barton. Local lad. I genuinely do, I'm fascinated by him. He does intrigue me every time he's on. You hear him on the radio, every time he tweets, it is something you do pep up and go, what's he on about now? So a 3-week ban from Rangers following I suppose a week's ban last week. Nobody's fully sure exactly what happened. Louis, I'll start with you from a professional footballer's perspective. Do you think he's ever going to play for Rangers again?
Yeah, definitely. I think Mark Warburton's just showing him who's boss, to be honest. I think, now look, we don't know what he's done, so we can't speculate. But I think what the thing is with Joey Barton, he's all art, isn't he? And he'll say it how it is. If he's got something to say, he's not shying away from anything. You know, years ago we mentioned about Gerard Lampard all doing books. Now he brought his book out. But... I've got a lot of time for Joey Barton in terms of, I don't know him too well, but you know, I know him, and for what he's done, to be, for me, in all honesty, to be not a mediocre player, I wouldn't say he's better than that, but for what he's done and what he's achieved coming from Liverpool, every kid's dream to go and play for in the Premier League, and you know, I know he made one cap for England, but he's had a great career for being, with all due respect to him, an average type midfielder, if you like. So, you know, he's had a chance to stay at Burnley this season in the Premier League. He's chose to go to Rangers, which, you know, for me, picked the wrong club. He should have went Celtic. But I think what he's done is he's thought, you know what, no, I'm going to go up there and I'm going to be this I am, and he's going to be this best player who he's thought he is. You know, there was a bit of going around what he's done with Scott Brown. He's, you know, saying he's going to be better than him, and he's going up there to be.
You said there now, you know, and with my accent, I'm always going to lean ever so slightly towards the green side of Glasgow. I've been there a few times, and I'm, you know, all my friends, all my people around me at home are always big Celtic fans. Barton was that Celtic fan at one stage.
Well, he was, but
so how, from a footballing perspective, and we'll get the two boys in a second. How do you do that? How do you turn it on? Just flip it, just because somebody is it because somebody's giving you a paycheck every week?
Well, of course, yeah. And I think, you know, he's obviously gone to Rangers on big money. Mm. He's the marquee signing, if you like, you know, promoted to the Premier League with Burnley, turned Burnley down because he wanted to go to Rangers. Now, people will say it was because, you know, money. People say because he wants to go and win trophies. Now, for me, I think it was a bit of both. I think he's got a good pay packet, 2-year contract. I think he's 34, is he?
34, yeah.
34, good deal. You know, when you're getting past 30s, any 2-year contracts is a big plus for you. And I think he's generally gone up there to try and win the league. You know, I'm not sure they will win the league this season, Rangers, but I think he's actually gone there and thought, you know what, I want to win this league. I want to go to Scotland. I want to win the top league up And, you know, what he's done now is he's just wearing his heart on his sleeve, whatever he said, whatever he's done. But fair play to the manager suspending him for 3 weeks, showing him who's boss. But Joey Barton will, he'll be even better than he is now when he comes back from this ban.
Does he come back?
That, but he probably does, but the context of it's everything, which is that they get thrashed 5-1 by Celtic and they look a million miles away. And I think that that's the beginning, middle and end of it, which is that if he has gone up there to win trophies, they'll be in, I mean, not just him. You know, you imagine being in that Rangers dressing room, first Old Firm game in God knows how long, and you haven't just been beaten 5-1. They were absolutely embarrassed. Mm. They were absolutely embarrassed by Celtic. They looked to be a million miles between the sides. As big a gulf between Celtic and Rangers as there was a few days later between Barcelona and Celtic. And you've got to remember, Barcelona have got the best front three ever in world football. And for me, if you're in that dressing room there with all the emotion and the pressure that's been on and the intensity of the run-up to it, and you get humiliated like they did get humiliated, up to and including Weir getting sent to the stands, that speaks to me of it's as close as you get to a nervous breakdown inflicting win on a football team, that, and that's what they've done there. And so I think that, and this is just the aftermath of that, is someone like Joey Barton, who was, you know, as Lowy's saying, wears his heart on his sleeve, isn't shy of saying a thing or two. Well, he might well have a thing or two to say, and it may well be that either his teammates or his manager hasn't liked the thing or two that he's had to say. And well, your manager's there for a reason, and if it's the manager who doesn't like it, then you're going to be in real trouble, whether what you say is right or wrong. If he doesn't like it, you're going to be in real trouble, and if you can't leave it alone. And I suspect that dressing room in the aftermath of that game was absolutely brutal. I mean, but you can't even, I don't think you can put into words, really, be, you know, in terms, if you haven't played at that level, we've all been decimated by watching our team get beat, but if you're at that level and that game and that fixture and everything that's riding on it, and you get humiliated 5-1, it must have been walking into a morgue. It must have been horrific.
Right. It'd be interesting to see what exactly happened. A few different things rearing their heads again on Twitter, like we talked about earlier on. We'll have a little look, and I get the feeling there's going to be some bridges have to be rebuilt there. But let's move on to the Premier League from the weekend. Sangi, Hull 1, Arsenal 4. We all thought this was a bit of a resurgence from Hull. Snodgrass again getting on the score sheet, a big player that you are all quite impressed with. But Arsenal still doing what Arsenal do. Nothing massive, nothing fancy. Their fans are as frustrated as ever, but getting the results and keeping themselves just rolling along nicely.
That's it, and I wouldn't say they were firing on all cylinders, far from it, but the mark of a good side, Connor, is they keep sort of eking out results here and there, and that'll keep them in the race for the top four spot. And I think Arsene Wenger will be, he won't want to lose his proud record, will he? He won't give it up that easy, but I think this season, more so than most of any recent ones that I can remember, I think he's going to have his work cut out mostly this season. So be interesting to see how it keeps going. But the interesting bit for Arsenal, or the good thing for them, is they're not playing great, but they're still in and around it.
Hull at the moment, lads, you suspect Mike Phelan will get the job in the next couple of days after this consortium's taken over. I loved what he said. He said, you know, the manager's job's there for me, but I'm just making sure the pay packet is on parity with the Premier League. You get the feeling that
Is that what he said?
Yeah, some of it.
Did he say that?
He's come out and he said it.
Doesn't sound like a manager who wants a chance to me, no, that.
But you know what? Fair play to him. I don't think he wants it, mate, Sangi.
Honestly, because
he's always been a number two, hasn't he? And I look at him and think, do you know what? He's not old, but I think he made the pressure, may not really want it. And I think you'll know better than anyone.
Right.
You know, as it won't be his pay pack, and I think it'll be more of a case of, well, new owner comes in, I sign a 2-year contract and I'm sacked after 3 weeks. So he'd be worried about what he's going to get if he does get sacked, rather than...
And is that the parity he's talking about? You know, like if he's gone in 3 weeks, that he has...
What do you reckon, I would have thought something like... Because I remember Dave Jones saying to me, when you sign a contract as a manager, the biggest thing you deal with first is not how much you're going to get a week, is your severance when you get sacked.
Because you are going to get sacked.
Because you are eventually going to get sacked.
I'll give you it here. Let me see.
It was a moot point for Wenger, though, wasn't it? The old severance, or Alex Ferguson.
Wenger sitting there got this cracking severance clause, you know.
But you know what, though? You know, on that, right? Here's the thing. I was speaking to somebody about this. When you've got an owner that wants to sack a manager really, really quickly, and really regularly. Do you know what? It hands all the power to the players. Because they just go, do you know what, three or four? If I don't like you or your methods, or I don't like your number two because you're a bit of a bully. Yeah. Do you know what? All the lads pull rank. I'm not saying they have a meeting and say, tell you what, let's lose four on the run. But subconsciously, their effort goes down. Then they lose three or four or five on the run. Then they go, well, do you know what? He's still here. Tell you what, another couple, and he's gone.
Here's the power to the players.
It's ridiculous.
Here's the quote. I would have liked to have got the contract done weeks ago, but it's only in the last 24 hours we've ended up in this state of affairs. You do want parity with the Premier League, and going forward, hopefully that's what will happen.
Well, right. Again, let me just put a thing on that. So parity with the Premier League. So, and again, I think that's I wouldn't say a misguided point, but I think it's probably wrong. So what does parity mean? Does he want to be paid as like Jurgen Klopp or Conte, or does he want to be paid... Is getting paid the same or similar to Sean Dyche parity or Eddie Howe parity?
Eddie Howe, yeah.
So that to me is a moot point. You're paid what the relative structure is to your football club.
You can see what's happened. Basically, there's a new set of owners coming in. They're coming in from probably a different culture at this stage, a financial different culture. They've probably got a different view on things. He's maybe been told, I don't know, it could be a slightly different setup. He's going, right, before I sign on the dotted line, I need to make sure my interests are protected. We don't know, but that's
poor shout from a manager though, Connor, don't you think, to be talking about pay and parity and this and that and the other. He's unproven and done nothing.
It's his to lose though.
No, of course it is. And do you know, if I was him, if that was my genuine belief, I'd keep that private and I'd come up with some other narrative for the media along the lines of, I just want to make sure all the conditions are right. You know, this is my first bow. I need to know that I'm going to get the right support from the new ownership.
This is why,
talk about pay.
This is why All in the Game every single Monday between 5:30 and 6:30 is the best show on the radio. A football agent, a professional footballer and an award-winning football podcaster. Right, Crystal Palace 4-1 All in the Game. It's Palace look like, I said it a couple of weeks ago, I didn't suspect they would do anything. I had fears for them, but it looks like he's put the pieces in the right places. He's got a couple of decent results, but Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap, he needed them.
Yeah, they've got a decent front four, so they'll be fine. I mean, the front four is, you know, I think Benteke's made a big difference there. I was talking to a Palace supporter today, and supposedly he's made a big difference off the pitch, Benteke. He's come in as the main man, and he's acted like it.
That's
so, for
what
instance,
he needed, wasn't it?
Yeah, when the lad who's, I've forgotten the name, the lad who's broke his leg, but supposedly the first one to the hospital was Benteke. Only known him 4 weeks, but gone down there, made sure the other lads have gone down to see him, all that sort of stuff. So, and also you look at the way Benteke's spoken in the aftermath of the aftermath of leaving Liverpool and compared it to, for instance, Balotelli. You know, Benteke, respectful, very much. Mm. I had to go there at Liverpool. It didn't work out for me. Might not have been the right time. Looking forward to doing the business here at Crystal Palace. All the right noises. And supposedly he's had a big, big impact. Scott Dan gets his third goal of the season. By the way, it's worth pointing that out. He's on 3-5. And the lad I was speaking to today said, when they started this thing in terms of not pulling, not grabbing in the box, he said I said at the start of the season, be good for Scott Dan that, because he's 6'4" and he wants to win the ball in the air. He's very, very determined.
Raven.
So if you can't block him off, and he is very brave, he's already hurt himself once this season. So if you can't block him off, this lad said, you know, it could be a quiet nod in terms of getting 10. Stoke looking absolute ribbons. You know, you look at the results since Liverpool beat them in the League Cup, second leg.
Here's some facts for you. First of all, in the last 11 games they were beaten, 8 of those were by 3 goals or more. If you look at Stoke have never lost 4 games on the bounce before in the top flight. Stoke have not been in front even once in the Premier League this season. And this is a Stoke side who Mark Hughes said over the last couple of days that, you know, we have experienced players. Once it clicks in, we'll be fine. But there's lots of things to click in, Ryan.
It's easier said than done, isn't it? You know, Premier League, rock bottom after what, 5 games. You know what's coming next. It's been talking about the lads get together. Oh, he's not playing me. I'm not in a team I should be playing. He's not good enough. He's on bigger money than me.
How long do you think he has?
I'd give him two more games, yeah. You know,
they're on one point.
Connor, the Premier League nowadays, West Ham are the same. If they don't pick up soon, he could be gone. New ground, you know, bigger budget, sign more players. Yeah, these type of clubs, with your Stokes, and you know, your Sunderlands are going to be down there. Let's have it right. But West Ham and Stoke, for what they've done over the last few years, they shouldn't be nowhere near where they are. I think he's got one or two games.
Direction of travel. I think that, you know, when you say 11, you're talking about the back end of last season. I said before, I think that they've been pretty, pretty poor since they lost to Liverpool in that League Cup semi. They haven't been able to regain the direction as a club. I think he's in real trouble, Hughes. Real, real trouble. And as I say, I think it wouldn't surprise me. I think next weekend they're at home. They've got a soft one next weekend. They've got someone they should be beating or should certainly be given a game to. And if they ship again, if they ship by more than 3 goals again, then I think he's... I th- I think it's done.
Right. Well, let me just quickly add to that, Connor. I think it'd be really, really interesting, because I would go with the lads and say he's got one, maybe two more games, because the manner of the defeats. I would love to have a chat with the chairman to say, throw a cat among the pigeons and say, lads, listen, the manager's staying here. He's going to be here all season. Yeah, he's going to be here for the next 2 years. Yeah. Deal with it. Because then guess what?
Pull your finger out.
It's not him going. It's you if you're not pulling your finger out. I would love that chat with the chairman, because that would be fantastic. Just have a chairman.
Home to West Brom.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
But there's a point there. If I'm paying through the gate here, listen, and I see them at home to West Brom and they're absolutely abject again and they get beat again and I pay through the gate and I pay my season tickets.
I get that,
tickets.
Neil, but what I'm saying is, again, he was great. He was lauded as their best manager for donkey's years. I mean, decades.
2-11.
And now all of a sudden, 11 games, he's got to go. Mm. And this is my point is, I want to disrupt the norms in football. A positive disruption would be, no, lads, he's got 3 years left. He's going to stay. Let's see. And you know what? I honestly believe the media, the Premier League, the League Managers Association, the PFA, everybody would look at that as a case study and go, wow, okay. And I guarantee you, if he's got to be brave, the chairman, but if he did, he'd set an unbelievable precedent, in my opinion.
But he is playing Shea Given in goal.
Change your cats
because he's limp for me now. Listen, he's been brilliant over his career.
He's now limp. We said last week, thou shalt not speak ill of the Lord Shea Given in front of an Irish man. All right, there's very few rules in this show. That's one of them.
We're not speaking limp of him, merely his performances. There's a difference.
He's right. A big loss, Butland, though, isn't he, as well?
I'll say this. No, Stoke next weekend. So, for instance, they play Palace there. And if you're Palace, you know he's not coming for anything between the 6-yard box and his penalty area. Yeah. Because he's 3'8" and he's last, so you know that in advance.
He's 3 yards to the side, and he just falls over and it goes in.
He's not getting any munchies.
So there's that, and now West Brom. Tony Pulis's West Brom are coming next week. What's they're going to do? Yeah. Honestly, if there was ever a situation that needed boxing,
let's talk about that very quickly. West Brom, look at this. Chadley in there getting a goal. Rondon scoring. James McLean scoring, and Chadley scoring in the 56th minute. What has happened, West Ham? West Brom shouldn't be beating West Ham.
They shouldn't. But then, Watford shouldn't be beating United. It happens in this league all the time. There's going to be the odd one or two of them. West Ham have got a little problem. They've conceded 4 in 2 games back to back now. If you actually look at the stats, we've got them in front of us here. West Ham had 72% possession, shots on target 5, shots off target 18. If you're West Ham, you've got a problem now, which is that you came 5th last season. So when you go to West Brom, Tony Pulis says this to his lads: points all right here, just sit in. And last season, that wasn't happening to you anywhere near as much. Whereas now, people are giving you respect. But when they start to give you respect, you've got a whole new set of problems to break down. Because you've got to break these lads down, not just in your ground now, but in their ground. And before you know where you are, they've hit you on the break twice. You're 2-0 down. You're all at sea. You're all arguing amongst yourselves. They get a third one before half-time. And then you walk into that dressing room and the gaffer's looking at you.
And I agree with that, Neil, right? But why isn't Slaven Bilic working that out? It's his job to. Why isn't he sitting there coming up with the same things that you've just said?
Then hold on, let's talk to a man who would know what it's like in the professional footballing sphere. You're 2-0 up against Watford 7-8 days ago. You're absolutely coasting. You're playing literally Ole football in a new stadium. Then all of a sudden, you're defeated 4-2. You go down the road with some of the best players in the Premier League, and I'm taking Payet into this. There's some really, really good players there. And then you're defeated 4-2 by a team who've been abject at the start of the season.
Well, first and foremost,
how do you deal with this?
Going to the Olympic Stadium is a bit of a downfall for West Ham. Because going to West Ham was a tough place to go. The bubbles are out and everything. Now you're at this lovely stadium and players go in and go, oh, it's all right, this.
Facilities.
Yeah. I said that's like an away game for West Ham's players, because they're getting used to it, aren't they?
Yeah, so they're trying to get used to it. New teams are going there. Players going, oh, I'm up for this one. Yeah, that's decent, this. Watford, 2-0 is a tough scoreline at half-time. They come out, beat them 4-2, was it? Mm. You know, so it's going to be tough for West Ham. And as we said before, them two chairmen in... you'll know, don't you? It's his name.
Gold and Sullivan.
They don't mess around, mate. If he's in that bottom three within the next 2 weeks, he's another one gone, because they've invested in this new stadium and spent all this money, give Payet probably 150 grand a week. They're spending money. They can't afford to be where they are now.
Right, let's see some of the other results. We've already spoken about Everton 3, Middlesbrough 1. We spoke about the Friday night game as well. Liverpool beating Chelsea at Stamford Bridge 2-1. Watford 3, Manchester United 1. 3 defeats in a week. I'll ask you, Sangi, first of all. I read a lot of commentators today saying that people have potentially found Jose Mourinho out. And I think that's almost a moot point as well, because finding a manager out is very easy to do. You look at how they set up and you try and counteract that. If it was that simple, we'll all win football matches. But the fear factor, I think, has gone ever so slightly for teams who play against Mourinho. And that goes right back to Chelsea from last season.
No, I tend to agree with that. I think, but it's not Mourinho on the pitch. I think it's the players on the pitch. Mourinho is just the one who sends them out there. I think if I'm a fellow manager, I don't go, Mourinho's lost his fear factor, lads, you'll win today. I would more be looking at, I think, the form. You look at Rooney, he's somebody now who can be played on. Angora, somebody like Ibrahimovic, he's not going to fight you when it really comes to a fight, I don't think. I think he wants to strut. I think he's the type of fella, when it's all going great, really be really, really interesting. Now he's playing in the toughest league in the world. I'm not saying you can always have it your own way when you're in Spain or Italy or France either, by the way, but, well, maybe France. But it's going to be really hard. So when you're investing so much time into these players and so much money, you've got to give them the head. Now, he's never dropping at Ibrahimovic, in my opinion. He might have a little private chat and say, I'm resting you. But I don't think he's... I think he's built Ibrahimovic up to be a player that he can never drop. Pogba's form, he's invested so much. It takes bravery to buy a player for that type of money. But then it's even braver to give him a rollicking like a Koeman did with a Ross Barkley. It's even braver again. So I just don't think they're as good as maybe people give them credit for, but time will tell.
Lawyer, sorry, go ahead.
No, go Lawyer first.
I was just going to say, Lawyer, as a striker, do you know when someone like Pogba, who isn't having the impact he should have, does that frustrate you up front?
Yeah, it does, but I don't see Pogba. I don't see a Pogba's going to get a ball out his feet and hit a dag and put it on Ibrahimovic, if you like, or he's going to slide him through.
What,
I think he's more
he
of a.
Do?
I've not really seen much of him, to be honest with you. I watched a bit of him in the Euros, and then I've watched him a bit of for United. He hasn't really done much, to be honest with you. For £100 million or £96 million, whatever it was, he ain't done a lot for me. And then for United to more or less give him away a few years ago and then to buy him back for that was, I don't know, it's just silly money. But I think as a striker, if Pogba, I'm not relying on Pogba. I'm relying on a Mata. Who I know is going to slide me through. Or I know is going to dink a ball over the head. Or I know is going to, you know, outside of his foot, is going to bend one around the centre half, meet a little tap. And they're the type of players I'm looking at. I'm not looking at a Pogba thinking he's going to get me 10 assists this season. I don't know what he's giving
you. What's his role, Neil?
I think Mourinho's ended up with a big problem, which is his three highest earners all want to play in the same bit of the pitch with three lads with pace around them. And they obviously can't all play in that area of the pitch. And then they obviously can't, at some sort of point, it falls apart. So his three highest earners are Ibrahimovic, Rooney and Pogba. And I'm not one who's going to slaughter Rooney. I think Rooney's still got loads and loads that he can offer United. But I think he needs to offer it with three lads in front of him who've got tons and tons of pace. Mm. That's not Ibrahimovic. Pogba wants to play with two behind him, three in front of him, and those three in front
you
have tons
and
tons
of pace.
You've
got one in the Rashford, haven't you? But so,
you've
said.
You got Martial.
Martial's a bit hit and miss, but I think in Rashford, he's young, he's scoring goals, he's a goal scorer, but who's he going to drop?
And this is, I think this is...
There's his problem.
When I was away, I saw City versus United, and I, you know, watched it, and I thought after the fact, what would you have done differently? You know, what would you have done differently in terms of setup? And the way I would have wanted to set up is to play someone behind three lads with pace and say to City, we're going to try and turn you around and we're going to try and spin you, because City were just able to push up. Ibrahimovic wants to come and play. He wants to come and get involved, play deep, ping it off, go, come in, arrive, bang, there you go. So he wants to play there. Rooney wants to play there. Pogba wants to play there. That's where the three of them want to play. And they've got these lads around them. Mkhitaryan's got tons and tons of pace. Martial's got pace. Rashford's got pace. All these lads are around them. And yet, he's playing Pogba. So he's compromised. Pogba next to Fellaini. When he wants to play two lads like, for instance, Schneiderlin and Fellaini maybe, or Schneiderlin and Carrick, who feed the ball to wide areas. And then whoever it is who plays here in behind the other three can just arrive and do his thing, whether it's Pogba, whether it's Ibrahimovic or Rooney.
So is it unfair of us not to mention Watford, Capoue scoring?
It is unfair, yeah.
The gentleman who come on, the young fella come on in 83 minutes. Zuniga hasn't scored in 5 years, scored after 53 seconds on the pitch against Manchester United, not bad. And Troy Deeney rounding things up.
Both those goals come from an example of what I'm saying. Both those goals come from a lad arriving onto the edge of the box, coming in, steaming in a pace in order to finish. And again, that's pace in wide areas, turn you down, spin you down, get to the byline, look up, pull back, bang.
That's
goals.
League two football, aren't it?
Well, that's good Johnson for Chelsea, for Mourinho.
We have a minute. The Legends is on at 6:30 this evening. Steve Hollisell is going to be joined by Sharpie and Aldo. Get your calls in now at Radio City Talk on Twitter as well. Let's look ahead to tomorrow's game. Everton taking on Norwich in the League Cup. Liverpool taking on Derby. Give us your prediction for both of those, starting with Sangi.
2-1 wins, isn't it? Liverpool Everton, two Merseyside wins. No doubt in my mind.
Right. Okay.
No doubt.
Okay.
I'm following suit. Comfortable win for Liverpool. Like and a comfortable win for Norwich. I mean Everton.
He has to get it. Welcome back, Lois.
Lois,
he has to throw a little line in the pond every now and then.
That's what mate Dan and Ali always get it.
Neil, I have 29 seconds. How do you think tomorrow's going to go from a Liverpool perspective?
I think Liverpool are going to find it difficult, and it wouldn't surprise me if this one goes to extra time because I think they're going to make the 4 or 5 changes.
Lois, what's he talking about?
And not least are you going? Are you going? Yeah.
And unfortunately, I have to pull the microphones down here. They're having the row, they're having the fight behind me. Listen, lads, thank you so much.